Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, halflings. How are you doing? It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined, as always, by the fantastic...
Luyando Nati Lewis Nyao, but everybody calls me Unati!
And the brilliant...
Jeremy Cobb, but one person calls me Jack, because I played a dog named Jack in a play that I did with her. And she liked the way that I barked. That is the story.
Bark, boy.
Anyway. Jasper was there. It was a pretty good bark.
I was there. Yeah. It was a good bark. it is a strange feeling for me, as I have not actually brought and found this incredible guest that we have on today. This has been all down to our amazing Unati. Do you want to go and introduce our incredible guest this week?
Okay, sorry, I'm gushing and it's weird. Okay, I'm going to stop. Today, we have the amazing, the most wonderful, the queen of wholesomeness and spreader of love and joy and kindness, the cutest pootie patootie and smartest, most amazing, sweet Korean learning honey and dice. You are not delicious!
Well, listen to us talk about fat art in episode 3.
Let's make them even more black.
Oh my god!
Vandal in the broad!
Lemming, teachable moment.
Yeah. Full prince vibe? Woof.
Is this the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon?
That's disgusting and I love it.
We're about to get into something real big now.
Honey, I feel like now you immediately need to have a voice that sounds like this. Hey, what up? And just have the foulest language and just be completely just the most jerking person for the rest of the interview.
The funny thing about that is that my regular, without putting effort into it, talking voice is like baby, but I've had to train myself over the years to talk at a lower register because of career and profession and all the rest of it. And this is my lower register already still in the baby range, but still.
Already in the baby range.
So we just really wanted to talk to you about all of the amazing things that you do. And I guess we're just going to like dive in with some questions. The first thing that I would like to chat to you about quickly is sort of like mainly like your origin story with D&D, but slightly differently from other interviews. I'd really also like to know, like, cybersecurity though, like, look at you breaking these glass ceilings, you know what I mean? Like, yes, black yes. woman in tech out here stunting and like running the game with these D&D games and these other sort of TTRPG games, just like out here living with your heart on your sleeve. Tell me about that origin story, please, and thank you.
I feel like I have said this several times, so if people listening to this have listened to another interview, hey, I'm back at it again. But yeah.
With the white van.
I always say I got started with the TTRPG world and playing games and things like that because I love storytelling. I've been reading since I was 3, so my love of stories and world building and everything started at a very young age, because not only was I reading at 3, but I also didn't have a lot of video games and TV and so on. I joke around and say I got a block and a book and not those Legos or linking logs or things that interconnect, but like the wooden blocks, you know, that came in the little pack.
Yeah.
And you had
like,
the red one,
like Jenga box.
The orch one. Yeah.
Like Jenga actually, box, kind of.
Yeah. One of them was an arch and you could pretend it was a phone and the little
cylinders
would carry. Yeah. That, yeah. Yeah, because I had whole storylines around those blocks. But when I started to play with other people and the concept of play pretend came up, I didn't know how to play pretend right with the just fly by the seat of your pants. my play pretend was all very organized. There was like, here is the setting, here is the world, here is your character. This is my character. This is season one. This is season two.
No, that's focus. Too early in your story arc. Let's just roll back a second.
You know, someone like, I want to be a fire breathing gorilla. That doesn't fit. This doesn't fit with what we're doing.
Sorry.
This is the mini Star Trek game. This is not the fantasy game. You can go do that.
Maybe in the spinoff. Game.
So I say that to kind of the premise of so when I started to military brat here. So when I was about to move away from everybody that we were playing with and stuff for all these years, and internet was there and there was forums you could build and all that kind of stuff, I said, let me build a forum so we can continue playing together. And that introduced me to the online RPG worlds and the writing communities and all the rest of that. And when I learned that there was a way to add checks and balances to the storytelling with dice and all the rest of that, I was like, oh my goodness, look at this. So I started with those D10 systems that they would make every time a TV show or something was super popular. There would be this D10 that rolled out for Buffy or for Firefly or for whatever the show might be. They would have this TTRPG D10 system that would exist. People would take that, program it into, I'm going to date myself here, but the Telnet settings and so on, or the dice rolling scripts in IRC. And you'd be writing in paragraphs, and then you could roll your dice. And I loved that there were checks and balances. So I started to learn systems. I avoided D&D, honestly, until I was an adult, because somehow I convinced myself it had to be the hardest system. But I say that as someone whose favorite system was like Call of Cthulhu basic roleplay percentile based system.
I love Call of Cthulhu so much.
So it was like I started doing and playing the Dungeons & Dragons sort of games when someone asked me to play in a charity stream. And I was like, okay, sure. They say it's D&D. I said, I've never played it before, but if it's dice and character building, I can do it. That connects to cybersecurity in a very odd way. That connects to cybersecurity because I was introduced to a lot of communities, writing communities, gaming communities, and so on from a very young age. And as an adult, I can look back and see that there was a lot of things I was exposed to at a very young age that I was very much too young to have been exposed to. There were less protective measures online at that time to keep people from preying on other people or targeting people or even really giving the adults and children's lives a better idea of what's going on. So when I graduated and I was 16 when I graduated from high school. So I said, I love languages. I love music. I had competed in poetry for years, studied languages, wrote all this kind of stuff. Kind of threw everyone for a loop, especially everyone else. Like, you play piano, you're so good. I said, I'm going into cybersecurity because I wanted to find a way to better protect children online.
Yes.
So that's really why I got into cybersecurity, because of that concern. And the languages and the music and all of that actually helped, because I already could type pretty quickly because of playing piano for years. And learning codes and languages and new jargon and stuff when you learn to read music or different languages, especially things like Greek or Japanese. It all made that learning process easier for me. But that's really why I got into cybersecurity, is because I was concerned about other children online.
Yeah.
That's a when I graduated thing. With my first degree, Google had already come up with Safe Search, and I was like, well, so...
They did it. Rats.
But what it allowed me to do is have the expertise where people would listen when I would go speak at a school or talk to parents and so on about changing the approach to internet security from being, gotcha, you're not supposed to do that, to this is what is out there. this is what's appropriate for you at this age. This is how to do it safely. And let's have an open dialogue about what you're doing, how you're doing it, and so on, so that people don't get themselves into dangerous situations because they're always hiding things because of the gotcha. And I didn't know that. I'm going to stop it. And
yeah. It's almost like the embarrassment factor, I guess, of being caught. Or, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's really...
Yeah, no, that's so exciting because I was like doing some research today for this, and I was like, oh, I was kind of born a little, like I didn't really grow up with the internet that much. Like I was quite old when it sort of landed. I'm old. Wow, I'm so old. And then
Nati's 48, by the way.
And then it was like I'd opened up this weird door in my mind that I'd shut, and all of this stuff fell out. When I started to just think about it for a moment, I was like, oh, wow, no, that was a dark place. Okay, let's put all of that back in there. We didn't need to think about that. We had dealt with that. That door was shut. Why did we open it up again?
That's how it was, right? It was the Wild West when we were all younger. Like, I remember back in the dial-up days just being like, I can type in anything and it will come up.
Yeah,
like,
anything.
Okay.
It's terrifying. I wanted to ask about those charity streams, and like namely like the work that you do around diversity and inclusion in the communities, and not only sort of LGBTQI inclusion plus inclusion or gender-based inclusion or race-based inclusion, but also like including people who are differently abled, like because I think non-differently abled person?
I think disabled is, at least in the United States, very commonly used at this point.
Okay.
Disabled versus abled.
Yes, thank you. That's what I meant. Yes. English runaway. It's my second language. Being not as an abled person, like trying to bring that into my games and making players who may be disabled feel comfortable and included and not feel like they're being erased. What thoughts do you have around that?
So when I first started to deal with all of this online, I was more surprised that it was such an issue or that there was such a gap there because in my brain, I live in a world that is full of so many different, I'll use the example, like so many different colored pieces of thread to this beautiful tapestry that is humanity, that in all my world building and storytelling and things like that, I never had to reach and say, I want to make sure I include this, or I want to make sure I include that, or I want to make sure these players feel comfortable playing characters that reflect them. That was just part of the worlds in my head. So when I started to interact with other people and I started to see that there was some resistance to the idea of if somebody else wants to play something in a specific way, if it makes someone uncomfortable because it is other, there is a clash, there is a conflict. And I personally just find that, like, at a certain level, a little bit ridiculous. Like, my brain cannot grasp, like, if you don't like avocado and this person has avocado in their salad, why are you tripping about the avocado? Like, you don't have to eat it.
I had a conversation just like this the other day, like, with not the avocados, but actually D&D, where I was talking to a guy about how I was like, oh, I think it's cool that Tasha's Cauldron of Everything now gives you the option to customize your racial traits and in potentially even customize the race itself in quite a few ways. And that person was like, you know, yeah, I really disagree with that. And I was like, how do you mean? And they were like, well, I really like the idea. This is the actual words they use. I really like the idea of some races just being better at things than others. And I feel like overall, like, that's a part of the game that I think it would be good to keep. And I was like, okay, well, I mean, not everybody wants to play that way. So, and they didn't make it mandatory that you have to do it. It's just, it gives people the option. It basically just it made the option, because people were already doing it, obviously, but now they've made it official that there are now mechanisms in game to do, or like in within the rules themselves to be able to do it. You know, so it doesn't stop you from playing the way that you want to. It just lets other people play the way they want to. And they were like, Yeah, I guess that's nice. I just don't like it.
Yeah,
and we just kind of moved on.
It's one of those things that always makes me tilt my head to the side and really avoid those type of dialogues. So I really am focused on the light and the laughter and everything else like that. So I really don't have the spoons or the times to engage in drama. You know, I might look like I'm still in high school, but I haven't been in high school for a minute. I'm not trying to relive the hormonal days. So
yeah,
it comes to
nobody wants to do
so
that.
Like diversity and inclusion, I've always said you can't have a conversation about diversity and inclusion without also discussing accessibility and the inclusion of people who live with challenges, whether they're physical or mental, or you know, even during their journey of self-discovery. And I've even said that in corporate meetings when they have to conversations about diversity and inclusion. I really don't see the point of having this conversation if we're not going to talk about visibility being given into what programs and processes and improvements are being put in place to make sure that this is a inclusive and accessible workplace for all of your employees, especially if you say that you are endeavoring to accommodate people with disabilities or neurodivergent conditions and so on. So when it comes to, I think there's two parts to this. When it comes to people wanting to play characters who have disabilities or are disabled based on, and I use both terms because some people are comfortable with saying I have a disability and some people are comfortable with saying I am disabled. It is a personal choice. One is not better than the other. But people with disabilities or neurodivergent conditions and so on, if a person wants to play a character that is disabled and they are not disabled themselves, I take a little bit more time to walk through the reasons why they want to play this character, how they planned on depicting it, and so on. In private games, this is a little bit easier to deal with. I tell people in the streaming world, there's sort of a time and a place, and you have to understand that if you are in front of a lot of people, you do have to care about the impression that you are leaving. So private versus public games, I usually tell people if you don't have any experience in a particular disability or so on, that heavily impacts your life. I'm not talking about, oh, someone is missing, you know, a leg because he got ate off by a dragon. That's something that you really won't fall into like stereotypes and dangerous, almost mocking territory. But things like being blind or visually impaired or deaf or hearing impaired and so on. Those are type of disabilities that I tell people to steer away from if they're going to depict those characters in a public game.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. I remember back, I think circa season 3 of Community, like the last half of that show, I used to be on the AV Club all the time, the website, and they would have these long discussions about that show. And there was somebody on there who was themselves on the autistic spectrum who did not like the way that they had handled part of Abed's arc in the last half of season 3. And it wasn't just a matter of like, I wasn't a fan of this, but like, because they hadn't seen, this person hadn't seen very many depictions of people on the spectrum in media that they felt were respectful or reflected their own experiences. And Abed up until this point had, it was actually really hurtful to this person for this particular character direction to not like make jive with their perception of how he should have acted. So it wasn't just like a, you know, I just wasn't a fan of that. It was just like a, wow, this is personally hurtful to me because you're now reflecting me in a way that is inaccurate. It feels like, and I think that's that seems like it's exactly what you're talking about there.
And there's enough out there in the tabletop RPG community right now, there are a lot of people who would love the opportunity to play at a table and to, play characters that reflect themselves that I think you almost don't need people saying, I want my character to be blind. Because the first thing that pops in my mind is why? That's it. Anytime someone comes to me and says, I want my character to be blind, I say, why? Is it because you want to better empathize with people who are visually impaired? And you want to put in the time and the research and talk to people and really find out what is a respectful way to depict this because you want them to see somebody or a character that reflects them? Or is it a... because some systems have feats and so on. Or is it because you want the feat to get advantage in this other point or that, and you could really care less? But the second one is, if you're talking about accommodating people who the players themselves are, have disabilities and so on, as a DM, as a game master, as a storyteller, whatever the title of the person is in the system that you run, you have to take personal responsibility of to make sure that the people at your table have the things that they need to enjoy themselves. I have played at tables, even with people who had English as a second language, and they came up to me before the table and before the game, and they're like, I'd really like to play because I've never played before, and you're offering a beginner's game, but I'm worried because English is not my first language. And I just get to say, I got you. And know that for some people, having more written aids are important to them because they may not be able to translate quickly in their head to speak, or they have to do that second piece of translation when you're speaking. But if you've written out the handouts or you write it down for them to see and so on, I know personally there's some languages that I can read and understand better than I can when I hear it. So I'll always sit down with those people and ask, does a visual aid help you more? Or are you fine with just the audio? That means being understanding when people need to use secondary devices. I know a lot of people will be like, oh, I don't want phones at my table because it's a distraction. You have people who are neurodivergent who actually need that distraction, whether it's for stimming purposes or to focus themselves or anxiety, whatever it may be, and they're not using their phone to be rude. That's just part of how they are able to engage with the outside world in social settings. You have people who have dyscalculia. You have people who have all sorts of things that you may or may not be aware of. They are not required to disclose if somebody doesn't want to disclose it. But if they do tell you this is a challenge, I can't use paper because I'm visually impaired, so I have to use my laptop because it has my screen reader on it, or whatever the case might be, you have to be willing to make those accommodations. I always ask before I get into a space, is there easy access to a plug? Because people who do need to plug up their devices in order to participate in the game, I don't want it to be a huge production. So you just have to educate yourself, know your table, and make sure every person feels comfortable coming to you. An important question to always ask, if they don't introduce it as a topic to the whole table, and whether it is a visible or an invisible disability or medical challenge or neurodivergent situation, do you want the rest of the people at the table to be aware of this or not? Most times they'll say, I don't mind, because it's easier to play in a group if everybody knows what to accommodate. And yeah, that's a lot, but it just depends on if you're talking about characters or you're talking about players. Because not everyone who is disabled wants to play a disabled character.
Of course,
Absolutely. Vice versa. So there's so many nuances to that, and I think it's a beautiful opportunity to tell new stories with people who have very interesting points of view.
And also have some very, I think, positive conversations, as you said, with those people that will help you to, I guess, gain more empathy for their position, and hopefully understand better how to engage with people who might have, like, might have a disability or some kind of condition in the future. I'm a big advocate of talking to people about like whatever, if there's something that's different about them than you, even if you're not going to be playing a D&D game, I've said it before on the show, but I'm a very big fan of engaging with the person, not as like a representative of whatever category they may fit into, but just as that person and engaging mm-hmm. with them about their experiences in that issue. If you purport to be a person's friend, and you like this person, well, this is part of that person, so you better get to liking this too. Yeah. And if you don't know much about it, then, well, here's your opportunity to learn if they're willing to talk about it. And generally, people love to talk about themselves. So like, if you ask them genuinely questions, how do you feel about such and such and such and such, as opposed to like, so do people in your category feel a certain way when like, as long as they're not being asked to be a stand-in for the whole category of people and you're engaging with them as a human being. Yeah.
Yeah.
Big fan. Yeah. I'm loving everything that you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. She's great, right?
It's fantastic.
So great. It's so fantastic. I just keep gushing every sort of 10 minutes. It's ridiculous. that's all really kind of beautiful and mind blowing. I think what we try and foster here, and I hope I'm not just speaking for myself, is a sense of community and getting people all up on the same page so that all of us can enjoy this game and other games like it in a way that is nurturing and safe and fun and super cool. Okay, I'm going to move on to the next question now. Jasper, you are so much better at this than me.
hey, look, I've had practice. Yeah.
I know you get to talk about this a lot, but I just want to hear it again because it's so great. I really want, and I also want people to, who may not have heard it elsewhere to pick it up. Your Embrace the Initiative workshops for working DMs. I really want to just dive in to that with you. And I really want, I wanted to know, like, what drew you to creating these workshops? Like, what was the impetus? Was there a gap that you had noticed? And then just talk about, like, about the workshops themselves and how they run.
So Embrace the Initiative came about because I kept seeing in online forums and so on the same sort of questions of, hey, I'm thinking about running a game for the first time. What should I know, or what should I look out for, or what should I do? And I saw a lot of answers from more of the mechanical side of things, mm-hmm. a lot of the methodology behind various systems and how to get started, and you need a dice, you need some players and so on. But I saw very little said about, how do I put this, heart? So when I started Embrace the Initiative and I pitched it to a convention, not expecting to get anywhere with it, I said, hey, I want to run a workshop to help teach game masters how to be confident and comfortable leaders in their hobby, focusing on having this safe and supportive space to help them like grow as storytellers and be able to adapt to new situations and really care not only about the stories, but about who they're telling the stories with. And so I was very surprised to find out that not only did it get accepted, but there was quite a few people who signed up to be part of the first one. And then I went to Gen Con and I ran a session there. And I said, it's for new and existing because we're going to have a conversation. And because the poet brain and mind, metacrostic poetry and all the rest of that was sitting there like E-M-B-R-A-C-E. If I make each one of these a talking point in a presentation of what it means to be a good DM or GM, I can, you know, fill 30 minutes worth of talking. And then for the rest of the workshop, we'll do basically whose DM is it anyways. And everyone would get a theme and they get the opportunity to run like a 3-minute, you know, scenario for the other people in the workshop. And there's lots of laughter and it was a wonderful time. That's what it really was about, was to have this safe space to go over the things like, I can go through the EMBR ACE, but like every time is your first time. Meet your players where they are. Be the GM or DM that you'd want to play with. Recognize what you know and be open to learn more. Ask questions and be comfortable with the answers you give. Change what doesn't work and roll with the story. And then, last but not least, each time you GM or do anything in life, focus on leaving the table a little better than you found it.
I love it so much.
That is poetry.
I want to get a tattoo.
Honestly, that's so lovely.
My heart.
So that's basically all I said. So, hey, let's just talk about what it means to be a DM or GM from a place of forgiveness and grace, understanding that there's a lot of things that you don't know that you know, and there's a lot of things that you think you know that you don't know. Same with every player at that table. So let's tell a collaborative story. You know, I said, in as a DM or GM, you really, all I'm doing is going over the instruction manual of you being the banker, so to speak, in this Monopoly game, but you're still a player.
That's honestly, like, there's so much of that I'm like, ah, oh, if only I'd attended this workshop when I first started DMing. And I think that even for the main reason that I never realized like how much of a personal experience DMing can be, especially when you're doing it with like really close friends, and because you're going on this like big adventure, right? Like, even if it's just in your heads, like I always love that. I can't remember where I heard this from, but someone basically said that the part of your brain which remembers things and sees images is exactly the same part of your brain which imagines, where you imagine things. And so effectively, as you're playing like D&D, as you look back, you are doing exactly the same thing when you remember something that actually happened yesterday, as you are thinking about you standing on that hilltop fighting a dragon. And I was like, that's so fascinating to think that then collectively as a group of friends, you're going on this incredible journey, which usually has some emotional stakes, some emotional weight, some interaction, all this sort of thing. And it can feel incredibly, you can feel incredibly vulnerable as a DM and as a player, of course, at times. And actually, like, just reminding yourself of some of those, like, you know, those core principles that you've just kind of spoken about there, and not the kind of like, this is how the rules of D&D work, that you roll the d4 here and a d6 there, and do you know what I mean? And it becomes that, because that, I feel like that's how I came into DMing. It was like, right, I need to make sure, I as long as I know the rules, I'll be fine, as long as I know the rules. Whereas actually now I'm like, ah, stuff the rules, I want to have fun with my friends. And I want everyone to be enjoying this with me, and do you know what I mean, as more of a collective thing. And I just think that's the most fabulous thing that I've heard, and I absolutely love the idea of introducing new people to the world of D&D in that way, rather than like the thing that you see more often, which is like, this is exactly how mechanically this subclass and should work, and therefore you need this much strength, this much, do you know what I mean, this much dexterity. Yeah, yeah. And if you're not playing an elf, then forget about it.
Always say, it's a simple equation. It's mutual respect plus mutual dedication, multiply it by mutual appreciation, equals collaborative success. And if you have that at your table, you're gonna have a wonderful time. Making sure that during your session zero, you're covering your safety tools and so on. And I use the term safety tools now because I understand how it is utilized, but before, that was just part of my session zero. You need to make sure you know everyone's potential fears or phobias or sensitivities and so on. I had created a rule out of necessity around death, because people were, you never know what's happening in people's lives. And having been on the side of not being warned about a TPK kind of situation and so on, how emotionally that affected me during different times, I always give my players the choice, and they can change it, that if someone has asked me to kill their player, their character, not their player, the character. Somebody
I think we need to talk about a different kind of, different kind of safety tools.
Do you want to stop recording?
No.
Like, I don't want people to come around your house.
No, if somebody,
sorry, 999, I need
a if somebody has asked me to kill their character off, which I tell people, please don't ask me to do that. I will write them out. I will do anything, but please don't ask me to do that because I don't like to do that. But if somebody wants their character to leave a story, I said, as a group, would you want to know that this exit is coming, or are you okay with it being a surprise? Because I've run into the situations where other players are more invested in another person's character's survival than the player. And they get very, very emotional when they're, you know, I cast this healing and I did this and I stopped the, and as a DM, I'm constantly having to come up with new ways to try to foil them because of this request that has been made. And I have had some players say, I'm okay with going along with the story and it being a surprise. And then I've had other players say, no one has ever given me that option before. I would actually like to know. You don't have to give me details, but at least like a little heads up that if it starts to go, you know, south. That everyone is expecting that. Because again, we're having a good time. To me, that's like spoiling something. People will have some people, they don't want to know any spoilers at all. And then you have some people who be like, tell me if the dog dies.
I need to be emotionally prepared for that.
I have a friend who cannot, who literally, if she starts getting emotionally invested in a series, she will deliberately go to the Wikipedia page and read all of the spoilers because she gets so, because the show now becomes actively uncomfortable for her to engage with unless she's sure that these two people end up together. Or something like that. But like the uncertainty makes it like truly unpleasant to view the show any further.
I just wanted to go back as well quickly, honey, because it's something that you said that really like, I think you said it a few times actually, and every time you said it, it's really resonated with me, which is like, that's just how I imagined it the whole time. And I was then actively surprised when something wasn't like that. And like, I remember meeting the material of like the books of D&D and being like, what do you mean you can't have, like, you're not supposed to have an intelligent orc? Like, it just seems like it's such a funny thing where, and I don't know if it's anything to do with us as people or what it is, the machinations that lead to you kind of investigating things in that way or not, I guess is the case. But it just seems so funny to me that like some people would have a real problem with the concept of like a smart orc. I'm using that as a very kind of broad term to encapsulating many, many different things that aren't included. But it just seems very, it seems like a very strange thing. And I'm wondering whether how you've like combated, I guess, if that's the right word to use, but like how you've kind of like come up against that and sort of said like, you know, kind of got around the whole like, look, we aren't hurting you. You go over there and play the game how you want to play it with your friends. Do you know what I mean? Go play beautiful elves and dumb orcs. It's fine. We're going to do something else. I'm just wondering how you've kind of existed in this space and still have so much light and joy whilst trying to change it. Like, that's the core of it.
When it comes to gaming systems, I tend to learn the mechanics so I know how those rules work. But I invest very little time in the lore. I'm going to be completely honest. Because the way my brain works is that's a story someone has already written. And it is a story somebody may be inspired by. But we're at my table to tell a new story. It's a lot of information for me to try to keep track of. You know, I have some neurological damage from medical injuries and so on. So I can get quite overwhelmed because it's very difficult for me to forget information, but I can't always access it as quickly as I would like. So if you give me a whole bunch of information that I don't need, it's difficult for me to sift through that and find the stuff that I do.
Sure.
I always joke around about D&D specifically because Dungeons and Dragons TM or whatever, I don't own a single D&D resource, but I have DM'd for like huge charity streams and so on and ran the systems with no problem. Because I know the basic rules. I've got the character sheets. Let's tell the story.
That's all you need, right?
My interpretation of, I think, statistics and attributes and all those kinds of things also play a part. I think you mentioned intelligence as a stat, and that's always an interesting conversation to me, because if you look at a system like Basic Roleplay or Call of Cthulhu, where it has education and intelligence, different systems will break that down in different ways. You know, you've got intelligence versus wisdom, you know, common sense versus book sense, and so on. I never really saw a lower stat as a character defining necessity. For instance, if you've got low wisdom, I don't think that necessarily means, especially if you've chosen a background where you were a merchant or something like that, that you don't have the ability to make good decisions on your own. But let's explore that in a way that makes sense to the character you've created. Because you may not be a detective. You may be a super fighty, I'm a combat, I used to be a gladiator type of character. And we're playing an investigative adventure. You may not have forensic knowledge, but you've been in enough fights to be able to look at a body and maybe identify what type of weapon did this. So the necessity to fall back on the traditional stats or requests for skills, I do something in my game called a player bid, which is we get to a situation where everyone has to face a challenge or overcome something together. I give them the opportunity, or sometimes they ask me, can I make a bid, which is them asking to use a skill or attribute on their sheet that may not have come to my mind to deal with the situation in a unique way that makes sense to that character. And if they succeed, you know, they get to role play that out. So that's always a beautiful thing to me. Sometimes a terrifying thing where they start out with, now, hear me out. When I hear that one, I'm like, okay.
I mean, I'm going to put a no out there now, but I'm willing to retract it if you nail this.
Like, you know, sure, go ahead. Difficulty, this is going to be high difficulty
okay,
level.
Okay, this is a 30. Yeah. You've rolled a 31. Okay, okay.
So, I just say how you interpret, I'll say this. Your imagination should be a place of freedom and creativity and in expression, expressing yourself in your unique way based on how your brain works. So to put that in a box based on what everyone else expects you to think about something is not how I operate. In fact, that's really, it stresses me out when that's the expectation. You know, and I've even told some people, I can run it. I can run this game, but it's going to be something that I wrote, because when it's something somebody else has created, it's challenging for me.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to spoil somebody else's story. Like, I don't.
It's so fun. I am exactly the same, because I really enjoy writing. I love writing. I've done a version of it, like you said, like world building, I think since I was about like 2 years old. Do you know what I mean? As long as I could speak out loud or hold a pen, I feel like I've been trying to tell stories, and usually terribly. Do you know what I'm not saying my writing's good, because it's not. But I think it's like, I then have like this kind of respect for writers in this sense. I feel exactly the same. I recently, with my partner, started trying to run my first ever like module, like specifically just because my partner really liked it, and she's not really into TTRPGs, and so she was just like, okay, I like this, so let's play this. And I was like, okay, fine. And it's so funny, because I got about 10 minutes into it and I was like, oh, I'm so stressed, like trying to read through, like, wait, it says it's on page 200, like my brain was already just like complete mush, because I found it so hard. I got about halfway through the session and went, okay, I'm telling a new story. But I found it so hard at the beginning to be like, how do I, you know, when normally I would be like the most elastic DM, and I do exactly like, I try to do as much as you, like exactly what you say. Like, if you can justify how you do that thing, I might make you still roll for it. I might not if you can justify it really well, etc. You like, do you know what I mean? You tell me what your character does. Whereas in this setting, I was just like, you open that door. I don't want to just make something up, because what if I make something up and then suddenly, and literally I did, like there was one point where I was like, I introduced a character that I'd seen on a random page. It's like, okay, they can be there. And then I remember we walked through another corridor and they're like, oh, this character should be there. I was like, oh, no, they're back in the other room.
They have a twin.
Yeah, exactly. And they have a set of information that is completely different to what their twin gave you.
The evil twin.
Evil twin. They're deceitful. I don't know. Yeah, honestly. So I'm so there with you. It's so hard. I absolutely do applaud anyone who can like flawlessly run a module, because it is tough. It is tough. And it's just so much easier when you're in control of the world. Just like, and this happens. Boop. Like, yeah. And also to be able to, like you said, be the flexible DM that you want to see. I don't know how I would negotiate certain, when I've come up against challenging moments, because they happen all the time, where players are either upset about a character death or a certain thing happening or an NPC death or something like that, something big, those moments. I don't know how well I could negotiate those running a module versus running my own game, where I go, I have the freedom and I am comfortable enough to navigate this in a way that I know is going to be suitable for my players. And not just suitable for what was suitable for someone else's players, i.e. like when someone wrote this module, you know? Mm. But really fascinating and so many things. I'm just like, this is so good. Yes. I need to attend this workshop.
Yes. Me too. I'm like, how do I sign up? And on that note, we always like to ask for a tale from the table.
Yes.
Like, do you have like a story, something amazing, epic or sad or funny or whatever, or really annoying, that happened at a table? You just can't get out of your brain, and you love or hate. Oh God, I'm gonna stop talking.
We enjoy it when you talk.
Yes. Yes. We do.
Your voice is so
literally
musical.
The point of the show.
It's a huge part of the show.
And I agree, your voice is very musical.
Thank you.
I'm struggling a little bit because I'm a mimic. And if I hear voices long enough, and it's not a conscious thing, it just happened from when I was younger, I will start to mimic that person's speech patterns. And I had to learn that people would think you were making fun of them, but I wasn't.
I am the same.
It's just like, this is what I'm hearing. And if I'm going to like say, oh, this is what so-and-so said, like it could be big, you know, Billy Bob that I work with, and I'm like, and then he came to my desk like, what you doing today? Like, and I just do that because that's
you
in
work
my
with
head.
The actual Billy Bob Thornton.
Honestly,
in Sling Blade. He's just in character as Sling Blade all the time.
Like, honestly,
we're here working in cybersecurity.
Honestly, true story, I walked into a corner shop with my mum once when I was about, I think it was like 6 or something years old. I'll have to clarify exactly how old I was. And there was a lovely gentleman of Pakistani descent behind the desk, and he started serving my mum, and I immediately started speaking back to him in a Pakistani accent. Luckily, he thought it was really funny because he was actually kind of impressed that the 6-year-old could do a pretty decent Pakistani accent.
Yeah.
But my mom
was mortified.
Honestly, she still tells me the story. It's like one time when my mom has publicly wanted to beat me. Like, she said, I've never wanted to raise a hand to you, but in that moment, I was like, shut up. Like, stop speaking. So I am so there with you, honey. I'm so
yeah. But say, tell from the table. This is always challenging because I love my players so much. Just about every table I've ever been at, it's been an amazing experience, and I put 100% of that on having amazing cast. I tell people, I've never had to put out a casting call and said, I'm looking for a diverse cast, or I'm looking for POCs, or I'm looking for this or that. I think I jokingly put it on Twitter recently, but it is a actual quote when someone was like, well, how do you find these diverse casts? I said, that's like asking me, how do I find seasonings for my food? My cabinet is full of so
just
many
look.
Different
just
seasons.
Look. Like, open your eyes.
Yeah.
That I have choices. Like, I can just reach out. And so my friends group and my followers group and the people that I associate with in my social groups are filled with so many people from so many different backgrounds and so many different, you know, from whether it's ethnicities, genders, national. It's just an amazing group of people to play with. So, so I will talk about one of the first groups I put together randomly, and it was just in comments. Somebody was like, we could do an all bard campaign, and I jokingly put I could run that, and then the people who were like, I would love to play in that are still really good friends to this day. But I did put together an entire all bard campaign.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And I called it Inspire. Mm-hmm. And I think I have problems because I wrote a whole everything. Every part of it was musical or lyrical or had elements of writing or prose or somewhere in the whole thing. But the first big bad they went up against was the Pied Piper.
Nice.
But it was the copycat of the Pied Piper. It was one of the children who had gotten left behind by the Pied Piper originally, who really admired and so on, and then ended up taking over for the Pied Piper and holding their village hostage for years. And there was a whole storyline because that's how my brain works. And I remember being so uncertain about this group of people that I'm not very familiar with, and whether or not they would be comfortable playing in a setting this original, because I'm not a lore master by any stretch of the imagination. But by the time we got to like the season finale of the Pied Piper arc and they had to come up against a sentient lake.
Wow, sorry, I'm just trying to imagine how that combat would go. I'm like, how do I?
It was one of the most amazing combat scenes that I got to run, mainly because we had some homebrew items called like Work of Heart, which is basically a spiritual weapon for a bard. And they got to summon it for the first time and they got to face it. But all of the characters, even the most chill of the characters, getting super frustrated with this lake who was going through an existential crisis. That when you really saw everybody playing off of each other so well and everyone getting even, it's amazing when you take a group of strangers and they become friends. Mm-hmm. That is my favorite tale from any table I've been at, is a group of strangers who come together to become friends. But Inspire was my first time doing that. And then from that, I did Clockwork Vines and all the rest of that. And every table, I could tell you a hilarious story.
Yeah.
But it would all be because the players that come to my table and are willing to take a chance, whether they've played the game before or not, whether they've played online or not, they bring to that table their unique selves. And from that unique self comes such a unique perspective on life that always leaves, at least me, leaving every session feeling like I have grown as a person.
Wow. Yeah, that's so beautiful. That's like, that's TTRPGs in a nutshell right there. Like, that is exactly my, that is exactly the experience of TTRPGs that I want to have in my life, is like that exact sensation. And whether that's that you're players who know each other before and you're playing characters that are all strangers, or the other way around, that like either way you all end up becoming closer and more and having a shared experience of beauty, like, ah, oh, honey, that was such a beautiful way to sum up.
My heart is so warm.
you just like cured a bit of 2020 for me.
I appreciate it because my players let me not get away with a lot, but like I told people, I don't know how to balance encounters. I don't think in that way. I don't think of, oh, they're this level and here we go. Like, it's a miracle because the Bard campaign, they all started at level one. They survived, and it wasn't because I was sizing. We had to use, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing you don't know, is that this lake they came up against, that was at level one.
And
level one was Tiamat.
Yeah, exactly.
The most terrifying creature that they faced, that they still to this day, and I'll tease them on Twitter about it all the time, was like this tiny creature about the size of a small plum called a note nipper that was looked so beautiful, gave out like this soft humming sound that would be a perfect C or a perfect D or so on. And super easy to kill if you can hit them. But if one shows up, it's going to call more and they swarm. And if one bites you, unless you kill the one that has bitten you, you basically have the equivalent of a hunter's mark on you for any other ones that might be in the space. And
that's incredible.
So on and so forth. So they're just like very annoying, beautiful, like mosquitoes. But every time I'd start to describe, you hear a clear bell tone. See, they'd be like, nope, no,
nope.
No.
Out, run.
Mm-hmm. Oh, running. Even.
Hell no.
No.
Then I put them in a cow.
I love D&D. In a cow,
or you put the
these sentences.
The PCs in a cow.
I love it.
I mean, you could have put the players themselves into a cow.
I put the larvae of those in a cow. So that if they damaged, basically, this creature I called a moon cow, if they cut it with slicing damage, they had to roll a dice, and if it got a certain thing, then certain, so many note nippers would be released.
Wow. That was the most glorious moment where I think all three halflings then, when you said, I put them in a cow, all three of us went to different places.
Yeah.
It could have, with how I run games, that was a valid question.
I beg your pardon, I need some clarity on that.
I feel like mine's the opposite way around, in that it's not necessarily the way I run games, but it's the way my players play the games and my inability to say no when I think, this has the potential to be really chaotic and super stupid, and I'm here for
it. Yeah, this is going to be really good.
And so by the end of the session, I'm like, how did we get inside the cat?
Yeah.
I don't remember that being an option, but somehow we're here, and I described it.
In the end, though, the real cow was inside us all along.
Exactly.
And I got to intro. I want to do a second season of it so badly because only one or two of my players figured out what the next chapter was going to be because I described that there was a spider web in the corner, and he got it right away. He's like, no. I said, you never know. He said, no. And he said, is it Nancy next? I said, yes.
I'm honestly, I feel like I'm now so uber fascinated about what it's like to play one of your games.
Me too. I'm like, I'm going to watch on Twitter and just wait until she does a class
report. Yeah, I'm going to go away.
Yeah, I'm in.
It's like, yeah.
I'm going to stay away from the cows.
There are some opportunities coming up. I'll give you all. They won't be streamed, but like during the holiday season, you'd like to run some non-streamed kind of games for people. And
yeah,
Yeah, I want to play. I just want to play. I'm there. I like playing.
Yeah,
I'm there.
Yeah, so. That's the thing. We just want to play.
I'm there like a bear. Thank you so much, honey. This has been so wonderful and so warm, and I'm full of joy now. And I think we're all full of joy. And please tell people how to find you, how to find these workshops, where to find you on socials, and how to find these charity streams that you do, how to support and get in and get and be a I'm stopping.
You're the only person here who doesn't want to hear you talk. That's what I find funny about it.
I was like, yeah, and more.
Oh, well, as always, I'm Honey, aka Honey and Dice. You can find me on Twitter at Honey and Dice. You can find me on Instagram at Honey and Dice. There's just nothing there. I just didn't want anybody to take the name. There will soon be, well, I purchased the domain honeyanddice.com, but there's nothing there yet, so stay tuned. There's going to be some exciting things there, including schedules and a more clear, like, when charity streams are coming up or what work I'm doing and so on. So that's coming, hopefully, at the start of the new year. That's pretty much where you can find me right now. I don't actively play in any games, but if you look up Paws and Claws or Princesses Save Dragons on YouTube, I was a part of a couple of those campaigns. Paws and Claws, that's a Pugmire life play. I played the Meowneficent Minister of Music, Miss Eartha Kitty. and you can find like a few things on there about, like, the Venturing Academy interview is up there if you look up Honey and Dice and some other stuff if you're looking. I don't know why you would, but if you are looking for some of the stuff that I've done, you can find it on YouTube or on other people's sites. Please keep your eye out at my Twitter socials, because a lot of information will be coming out about a 3-day charity stream that I am calling Honey Bunches of Hope. We'll be raising money to purchase gift cards for a local school that takes care of specifically offers daycare and respite care to families who have children with disabilities, medical challenges, and neurodivergent conditions. It started out specifically taking care of babies and toddlers who had HIV and AIDS, because no other places in schools and preschools would take them. And it's sort of grown since then. So every year I try to do a game-a-thon or something to give back. I ask the teachers, what do you need for your classrooms? They give me a list. And previously, after raising the money, I would go to the stores and go get everything they need and go take it up there and deliver it. This year, because of obvious reasons, I cannot do that. So I am raising the money to purchase gift cards so I can have a healthy amount to give to each teacher so that they can get what they need for their classrooms for next year.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
A wonderful person.
Just such, honey, a delight.
Thank you. Thank
just
you
like
so
honey.
I feel like if everyone needs to be a bit more honey, and the world would be a great place.
Do you know what I mean? If everybody just left the table and the world a little better than they found it, then everything would be awesome.
Like I said, love your you. That's what I tell everybody. My biggest thing is to remember to love your you. And if you can't, for whatever reason, today, that's okay. Because it's okay to not be okay, but it's also okay to be okay. Surround yourself by people who celebrate your successes and support you through your challenges. But at the end of the day, it's about loving your you. And if you need someone else to do that for you for just a little while, I'm here. Even if you don't know me. The world is a better place simply because you exist.
There you have it.
I think, yeah, we have to end it there. Like, there could be no more beautiful. Yeah. Nothing else could be said.
In the Shire, they say the three halflings' hearts grew three sizes that day.
Indeed they did. Indeed. But honey, that was amazing, and I'm such a pleasure to talk to you, and like, so to hear someone speak so eloquently all of the things that I've been trying to say for 6 months on this show is like, oh, cool, great. Honey said it. Now I can stop. No, honestly, like, it was fantastic. It really was.
It was great. Thank you.
Thank you for coming along.
Yeah, thank you. I always love to have the opportunity to talk to people about what I do and the love that I put into it, and hope that they just keep that going.
Now, moving on, we go into our first ever Friend of a Took section, which is where we get to shine a light on some incredible people in the community that we have met along the way. These could be shows, charities, or just an individual who is spreading the love and the joy. And this week, we actually got them on the show. Let's get on with it. So we are so thrilled to be joined by Alex on our episode today. I believe, Alex, you'd even messaged us and just said that you were interested in talking about this stuff and kind of putting it out because, you know, us talking about accessibility generally made you think a little bit about the way we approach these things in TTRPGs. And we're just really honored to have you on the show. So how are you doing, Alex? And tell us a little bit about you.
I'm doing great. So I do a podcast as well called A Couple of Characters, and my wife and I will make a fun, unique character every week, or we'll talk about a different aspect of TTRPGs related to creating characters. So we do that every, it comes out every other week, but you know, we do that because I had so many characters and not enough places to play them. So I was like, well, let's give them the spotlight, you know, a very common problem.
Yes.
The
amount of characters I've created on D&D Beyond is truly astonishing. You told us you registered as legally blind, and we were really interested to talk to you about just how that has impacted your sort of enjoyment, I guess, of TTRPGs and actually getting involved in TTRPGs. I guess, like, where did it start for you? Where did your love of TTRPGs start?
Yeah, so I briefly just want to mention that why I reached out, because I think it's kind of important. I was listening to your show and you guys were talking about, you know, representation of different races and people in like cities that when you enter them. And I finally had the realization, you know, what I never see is anyone with a disability in most of the like TTRPGs I've played. So that kind of made me reach out and say, hey, you guys might want to talk about this because it's another avenue of representation that I think is being overlooked.
Yes,
absolutely.
I think, you know, it's important to have representation for anyone that's marginalized. And, you know, I think it's so I'm excited to come here and talk about that. But so how did I get into RPGs is my original story was that my aunt bought me a book of like, I don't know what it was. It must have been like D&D 3 or earlier because I was like 10. And I opened it and looked at it and was like, this is too long to read. And I never played it. And then in undergrad, at the end of my undergrad, or university for your, you know, British listeners.
Yes.
At the end of my undergrad, my friend just added me to this Facebook group that was like Astra DD 5e campaign, and I messaged him like, what the heck is this, man? And he's like, oh, we're gonna play D&D and you're gonna play. And then he sent me the player's handbook, and I read it, and I was like, yep, I am gonna play and I'm gonna love this.
Yes.
That's awesome. So that's how I got into D&D, and I've played a few other RPGs since, but I always come back to D&D.
I love that approach, though. The I looked at it and was like, nah, this is too long, I'm out. Like, yeah, I think I know a lot of nerds that had that exact same reaction.
Like, I just love the fact that your friend's like, you're playing, and then you read the thing. You're like, oh, no, you're right. You're right, I am playing. Oh, wow. Like, you found out that you discovered that you were about to play this game just from reading it. Like, oh, yes. No, you were right. I am.
Right. Yeah.
Thank you for letting me know. I appreciate it.
Well, it was funny because I, you know, going through the player's handbook and I'm like reading through the races and I'm like, all right, I think I'm gonna be an elf. And then he messages me back, all right, now you gotta pick a class. And then, all right, I think I'm gonna be a ranger. And then he messaged me back again, all right, now pick a background. And I was like, oh man, there's just, you know, I didn't realize how much there was to it. Yeah.
And you got feats and all, you know, it just keeps going and going and going.
But that's when it gets very spicy.
But I'm like Unati, where once I got my hand on the player's handbook, I read the whole thing. You know?
And I was like, I can be anything?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything? Are you sure?
That's amazing. I love a good origin story. I feel like everyone's is very unique, but there's always elements of like other people's that you really recognize in their like the way they're drawn into this stuff. How do you approach it within the games that you either play in or that you, I don't know if you you DM in any games yourself, but I'd love to know what your approach is and what kind of advice you would have for someone who is thinking about, oh, do you know what, I need to get some more representation into my games, my streams, you know, whatever it could be.
Yeah, even just for me directly, because I'm hardcore clocking my privilege right now. I just got hit in the face with like a privilege breeze block of pain. Whoa.
Right. Yeah. So I think you know, a lot of even like you guys, where I was, you know, a person, even though I had a disability, when I started playing, I didn't really notice it for a while. And then once I listened to your podcast recently, you know, this summer, I was like, oh, yeah, this would be cool. So I think for me, a lot of the time it was not really there. And I didn't really think about it because, well, as a person with a visual impairment, obviously, I don't want my characters to be blind, too, because I'm like, well, this is a fantasy world. Why can't I be able to see, you know? But I think my advice would be for anyone trying to add some people with disabilities is really don't make their disability their only character trait. Like, oh, they're in a wheelchair and that's who they are. It's like, no, they're a complex person and they can be a jerk. They could be nice, but they're in a wheelchair, you know? Just you know, it's kind of there's the trope of like people that are handicapped might be, or people with disabilities might be nice because they're like, oh, they can't be mean, but I'm like, I mean, they can be assholes.
Yeah.
For sure. Like in my mind, like right now, like I'm imagining like, I don't know, like a sight impaired ranger who like uses tremor sense, but like with like an expanded range, but it's a complete dickhead. Like he's like he's like Geralt like to the max. Like he's a total asshole.
So, Alex, I'm curious, would you ever, at the, now that you've thought about, now that you've been kind of become more aware of the lack of representation, would you be interested in playing a visually impaired character at some point?
I always thought it'd be really cool to be a blind monk, because I feel like monks, you know, they're already so powerful. And it's like, well, yeah, why can't they have blind sight too? Because you know, monks are already, they're already broken. Let's, why not break them a little more?
They are so broken. Hashtag ban the monk. I'm never going to give it up.
But I think I have considered it. And, you know, like I said, you know, it would just be a complex character. And this is just one aspect of it. But I definitely think I'd have to have a DM that would work with me and make sure that it's like, well, I don't want someone that's like, well, the blind condition means you have disadvantage on every attack and attacks against you have advantage. And it's like, well, if I've been blind for 20 years,
I have adapted. Like I would
overcome some of this, you know, I'm adapted. But I mean, sure, if they went blind a month ago, then probably they would have that disadvantage.
In the heat of battle, you know, and you've relied on your eyesight for however long and you suddenly... absolutely, like someone casts a darkness, you might struggle to hit things.
Or like,
so I'm really interested in what your kind of your thoughts are, I guess, on players choosing choosing to have a like giving their characters a disability. I'm interested in what your take is on that, like the idea of introducing a disability or an impairment of some sort as a character choice.
Right. I think it's not a bad idea, but I think it's, you know, one of these things where you got to be kind of careful that you don't want to do it wrong and then make it weird. So I have a story about this. I have a friend that recently played a character with a prosthetic arm and the arm they had was like a magic arm, and so they basically just had a hand, and I was like, well, what's the point of, you know, having a prosthetic arm if you're not facing any of the challenges that come with that? You know, you're basically just playing someone with an extra, like a magic hand, so you know, I was like, I don't really know what the point was, but I get your, you know, I understand the idea behind it. It's like, oh, it would be nice if they had like a disability because they were in a war and they lost their arm. It's like, yeah, that's fine. But I feel like you had to I'm not saying you have to face challenges necessarily, but you just have to make sure you're approaching situations from a different perspective, right? Like, if you have a prosthetic leg, you're probably not going to be as good at running, so you might opt to stay back a little more often and probably not run up in melee. Or if you have a prosthetic arm, you're probably not going to want to use it like a two-handed weapon, because if someone jars it, might pop the arm off. So, so I think it's just like, I definitely think you can play them. Just got to consider these sorts of things and like, how can I play this but represent this disability in a way that is like not offensive, but also not like just, why do you even have it? You know?
Absolutely. That you still incorporate it as a part of the character.
Yeah.
It's not just there as like a sort of an add-on or like a meaningless kind of thing. It's like anything else in D&D that you allow it to inform your choices and the way you play a character. Yeah.
It's like with the Harry Potter books, and after the fact, J.K. Rowling is like, oh no, Dumbledore was gay. And it's like, well, you didn't show us that he was gay.
Yeah.
You had to show the character to be this, you know, to represent this thing. You can't just after the fact be like, oh no, there was Harry was trans the whole time. It's like, no, you have to show us that he was trans. You know?
That would be the biggest turn of events.
Oh yeah, that would be, you know.
and then suddenly like, oh yeah, Voldemort's black too. That actually does lead me on because this is something I really wanted to talk to you about, Alex, as well. It's just about language, because again, I'm, you know, very aware that I'm coming at this from a privileged position, and very aware that like it's a point that I'm not particularly well versed in. So I'd love to know just from your perspective, and obviously this doesn't mean this goes for everyone, you know, I'm not asking you to speak on anyone's behalf, but just from your perspective, what kind of language do you find that it is acceptable? What sort of language do you think is sort of useful or a positive, I guess, a way to positively speak about these things instead of in a negative way?
Right. I think, so I try to say person with a disability, because, you know, it is a person first and then the disability is second. I said handicap earlier, so I mean, I'm okay with that term, but I also don't, I prefer a person with disability, but, you know, if I can say it, I think you guys can say it too, at least to me. I'm not, don't go calling strangers handicap or whatever, but
that's a top tip. Yeah, guys.
But yeah, I think for me, and I go between legally blind and visually impaired just because I have some vision. So I'm not fully blind. Like, you know, when you think of blind, I think a lot of people think you just see pitch black. But there's actually a lot of variations on being blind. Like, some people only have peripheral vision. Some people can see like blurry things and can still read. So, and there's a lot of variations even within blindness. So I tend to go with visually impaired person, because that also makes me a VIP. Yeah. Which, you know, who doesn't need VIP?
Yes. Yes, Alex. Mm. I love that. We're just going to call you VIP from now on.
Exactly.
That's your new, like,
live your best life.
That's
going to
be your nickname. If we say VIP on the show, now we're talking about you.
Yeah. So that is, but that's what I think. And, you know, this is obviously just my perspective. And you got to be, you know, use the language that the person with the disability wants you to use around them. So.
Yes,
that is my that's my top advice. You know, ask, and if they get mad, then they might be one of these ranger assholes. That because I feel like you ask, you know, how do you want me to refer to your disability or something like that in a respectful way? Then they should not be negative about it. They should tell you and say, you know what, you said handicap earlier, and that offends me. Please use this. And so, you know.
Thank you very much for bringing up that point, because I've not necessarily like discovered it directly in any of my games, but sometimes, you know, in the middle of the night when I'm not sleeping at 4 a.m., I have these thoughts of like, how would I approach a situation? And that's really, really useful. Just like, you know, just knowing how to bring up a subject without being offensive. I think that, you know, marginalized people tend to like go, as a Black South African, I'm always like, oh God, what can I say? Because I don't want to say the wrong thing, right? Like, and I want to, and I want to approach somebody with like the utmost respect, and I want to start a conversation. But it's really, really helpful to hear you say that that is a kind of safe space, as long as it's like really respectful, because then I can go into games and go, well, okay, cool. Let's have a discussion in a safe way.
And I think, Alex, you've mentioned something there which I think rings really true for all forms of representation, or whenever you're talking about sort of marginalized peoples, which is that you refer to them as people first. I think that's the big thing that we said on this show, is that you've got to make these people before you make them a stereotype, or before you start giving them sort of big overarching character traits that are informed by, you know, race, or like you said, disability, or you know, visual impairment, or whatever, that they are a person before they are anything else. And I think that really sort of hits the nail on the head there. Something that I'd love to throw out to you as well, Alex, is like, because I know that for us, there's a lot of contentious things when we see people getting really angry about, you know, oh, you can't, like, I saw someone the other day saying you can't have a black elf, and I can't imagine how infuriating it must be. But how infuriating it must be when you're constantly seeing people fighting back against like wheelchair users, or do you know what I mean? It's like, it's just, it's such a ridiculous sort of stance and hill to die on, that you can't allow someone else's imaginary world to contain their own things, you know?
I find that weird.
And so I'd love to sort of just, you know, how has it been tackling that? Because I can't imagine, you know, I can certainly speak from my own experience in that I found it really difficult at times kind of shutting that out and feeling like an accepted part of the community. And I would sort of love to know what your experiences have been. If you've had, I mean, I'd hope that you haven't had too many negative experiences, but you know, they could be positive experiences as well. Just what have they been in terms of, you know, what's people's reaction been to you in being involved within the community and talking about things and, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So I think that the combat wheelchair that was recently published this past summer, has been a very good motivator to help people realize that people with disabilities deserve to be represented in D&D, and also kind of did start a bit of an uproar from some people who are like, oh, you know, you can't use a wheelchair if you're an adventurer. It's like, well, here, let me show you how I can. So I think that's been great. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, if people can literally learn to fly, why can't a person in a wheelchair be there too? And like, maybe later on he'll get wings and then he won't need the wheelchair, but for now he needs it and that's fine. So I think the people I've played with have been pretty great about this kind of stuff, and I know my DM has appreciated having me because it's helped him learn to describe things better, because, you know, he can't just, well, obviously we're not playing in person right now, but he can't just point at the minis on the map and say, all right, here's the situation. No, he has to tell me, because I'm there and I can't see the board. So he's got to be like, well, you know, you're about 30 feet away from this troll and this other, your allies over here. You know, I think it's helped him and even the other players too, to help them learn to describe things better and kind of make the game even better.
Yeah,
that we're all using more descriptive terminology because one of us can't see.
Yeah, and would you look at that? The one thing we always bang on about on this show, it made the game better. You know, like, as with all these things, it makes the game better. It enriches the game, having this like more open-minded approach. Because at the end of the day, it's about imagination. It's about it's about investing. And if you come at that from a closed-minded point of view, you're always going to have a lesser experience, in my mind. Do you know what I mean? For my money, I think you're always going to have a less fulfilled experience, for sure.
I don't know if you've listened to our Wagadu streams at all, Alex, but that setting, aside from all of the other really cool things that are in that setting, it actually has a small section referencing the inclusion of disabilities. in the world of Wagadu. And it's, I think their advice is to, if you're going to include a PC with disabilities, to allow that PC to have like compensatory additional magical abilities, to the extent that in some cases you end up more powerful than a regular character. I think they even imply that in that little section as well. That it's like, I don't know if it's like the forces inside of Wagadu or what, but you, it's like you have been granted additional abilities.
In sort of like Southern Africa, in Southern African kind of like ancestral lore and stuff. So across Africa, like if you're a twin, if you're albino, like there's a lot of like weird stuff around that. And I think what the Wagadu mm-hmm. Chronicles has done has taken that thing that actually across the continent can sometimes be quite a dangerous thing, but is being seen in a far better light now. And also with disabilities, because initially pre-colonially, you would have been seen to be blessed by the gods. Actually,
right.
If you were hearing impaired or visually impaired, if you were melanin impaired, whatever the case may be. So I think that what that's really done has taken something that somebody would think about as a disability or a disadvantage and said that, no, actually, because of your clan, you are now viewed as a higher being because of that. And your ancestors mm-hmm. will bless you even further, which is just because I've just started like taking another degree and I'm like really learning about like African sensibilities.
I found it exactly so I can read it for you.
Okay. Oh, amazing.
It has a section, disabilities in Wagadu. A peculiar and unexplained thing that happens in Wagadu is that when people with disabilities fall, they gain some special powers related to whichever disability they had in the upper realms. Blind people gain 60 feet of tremor sense. Deaf people gain advantage on all wisdom perception checks that involve sight. Mute people gain telepathy up to 60 feet affected by language comprehension. And people with walking disabilities are able to hover a few feet off the ground, moving at speed similar to other players. Falling great heights affects them as everyone else. Yeah. And it says players and DMs are encouraged to come up and discuss interesting solutions, keeping in mind that in Wagadu, disabled people might be rule-wise more powerful than other players.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, this leads me on really, really well, actually, to one of the last points I wanted to discuss with you, Alex, which was just that what would you like to see, having now kind of thought about this and it entered your consciousness, as it were, that you know, there does need to be more representation of people with disabilities. What would you like to see more of within like core Dungeons and Dragons? Obviously we've got things like Wagadu popping up now and sort of starting to really consciously think about it and address it, but I'd love to know, like, for you, is there anything that would like really excite you about like an addition to 5e, or you know, something they include in a later edition, or something that would make you feel a bit more seen, a bit more heard, and a bit more kind of like empowered to I guess either be yourself or to be, you know, other versions of you, etc. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever you wanted to play.
Right. I think so. I love magic items, as I think we all do. And mm-hmm. so I think it'd be really cool to see, like, you know, the combat wheelchair is a good example of a magic item that helps someone with a disability, but it's like, people that can walk would probably want to look at that thing and say, where do I get one of those, you know?
100%. 100%.
So I think it'd be awesome if there was like a white cane that doubled as like, you know, kind of like Daredevil's, where it has a grappling hook in there and, you know, you could spin around and make two batons and stuff. I know Daredevil is probably not every blind person. They might get sick of it because they're like, well, you know, this is our only representation. Yeah. And it's basically a guy that can see with, you know, with the other four senses. Yes. So it's not great, but, you know, but still, I think, you know, a white cane that turned into like a weapon or had some other abilities or some prosthetic limbs that could do other things would be cool too. So I think some of those items would be great. And like the Wagadu thing, it's great that they just straight up put in there like, hey, you know what? Blindness is a condition if you are a player that can see. But if you can't see ever, now you got tremor sense, which I think makes sense. Yeah. And same with the other disabilities that Jeremy mentioned.
I feel like we've touched on some really amazing points there. I wanted to like throw to you, Alex, just if there's anything that you feel like we've missed. I'd love to sort of like give you the floor to if there's anything that you feel like we've missed, anything that you feel like we could cover, anything that you feel like just, you know, our audience and just the sort of wider TTRPG audience would benefit from hearing that perspective. And then I would kind of really love, I'm just really interested in some of these characters you've created because you've bigged them up now. So I want to like, maybe if like we could throw out one of your favorite characters you created as well, because I'd love to hear that, give some inspiration to our audience about some awesome character creation.
Okay, so I think we've actually touched on a lot of the things that I wanted to, and I think it's been a really good conversation. I'm not sure if there's anything else. I'm sure we'll hang up the call and I'll think of
and immediately. Yeah. Yeah. Always the way. Yeah. We'll absolutely fire anything over and we can, I mean, look, it's been awesome to talk to you. Like we got to get you back on the show and maybe, maybe you got to come play with us at some point. Like it'd be awesome to have you.
Now that the Wigadu, you know, you've pointed out that it says this thing about having disability, I'm like, ooh, this, I already wanted to try it. And now I'm even more, you know.
Hey, maybe this monk dream is coming true in Wigadu. I mean,
join us.
That would be
it
awesome.
Is lovely. It is warm.
This is the new voice that Unati's been trying out recently, and we're loving it.
I have been doing too much voice work.
It really is. Like, I can just picture her on her pile of gems.
And you start doing ASMRs and helping people go to sleep.
That's pretty much, that's how you would speak if you're lying on a bed of gems, isn't it? You just, everything's,
I think
everything's
so.
Just great.
Yeah. Buttery smooth.
Between the people feeding you grapes, you know.
Yeah.
That's how you would
Yes,
talk.
Yeah. And fanning, being paid really well. I want to reiterate that she pays them so well.
Stupid amounts of money.
All right. So one of my favorites that I made was a halfling tavern keeper, and her wife was an adventurer that had retired, and then they owned a tavern together. And a mage came in and was like causing a ruckus, and the wife tried to like toss him out. And the mage turned the wife into a flail with true polymorph.
Then
my tavern keeper became a hexblade warlock with her wife as her pact weapon.
That's
it was
super
a lot of fun. And goal was just, you know, try to figure out how to fix my wife.
Whoa.
So that was pretty cool.
Whoa. That's really cool.
Did you have any way of like, did they have any way of like communicating with their wife? Or is that just...
I did not have that, but that would certainly have been an interesting thing if you could do that to like a telepathic bond or something. And
Yeah. I'm just thinking of recently one of my characters picked up a spear which had like an essence of Grumsh inside it, and it was it led to some very funny scenarios. And I'd love to see what would happen for this person if their wife was inside this flail.
Well, and also like her stats, like her strength and con were terrible because I was like, well, you know, she's been running a tavern for 10 years.
That's cool.
Like she's kind of pudgy. Mm. She's not in great shape because her wife was the adventurer. She was just kind of the cook in the back of the shop. So I thought that was a lot of fun. I played this for a little bit, like 6 months in a game that the DM had a baby. So we stopped that one for now.
Man, the moment that you realize as a player how important constitution is, and you realize what an error you made when you put low constitution, when you were like, I don't really need, I got a 7, or an 8 I've got to use here for my rolled stats. I'll put that on constitution. Alex, why don't you give us another, give us another, everywhere we can find you on the internet, you know, what's the Twitter, and I don't know if you're on Facebook or anything like that, but it'd be good to Instagram, let the halflings know whether we can find you, your work, if any of them have questions and things like that, where can they get in contact with you.
Okay, so our website is a couple of characters podcast.com. That's for our show. We're on Twitter at ACOC podcast and Instagram at that same place. I think my wife mainly just posts cat pictures, So
amazing.
I love your wife because yeah. I love cats. I am in fact a cat.
I didn't know that.
This is just a glamour.
Meow.
Yeah, love that.
Let's see. I guess we have an email address. I think it's a couple of characters pod at gmail.com. If you want to send us an email and tell us about your cool characters, or, you know, if you try one of these characters, we'd love to hear how it went for you. And like, why was having 8 con terrible?
Tell us all your stories. But... Tell us your stories about terrible constitution and what it does for your characters.
Yeah. Apparently, I'm a sickly, sickly human with the plague.
Yeah. And I guess if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Alex N Winterland. So like Alex in Winterland, but without the I, because there's not enough characters on Twitter.
Yes. Yes.
But. Yeah, I mainly just retweet our show and talk about other D&D things, so I'm not a bad person to follow. If you like D&D.
Amazing. Well, if you like D&D, then I think that's why you're here. So,
if you made it this far in the episode, you probably like D&D.
Yes, exactly. So go and check Alex out in all of his glory and his show. It sounds amazing. I'm really excited to go and check that out. Thank you so much for joining us, Alex.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
For today. It's been really awesome, and hopefully we'll get to talk to you on the show again sometime soon.
Yeah, anytime. Let me know.
So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.